Okay, so let's get started. Okay, so we seem to have lost the bottom right of the class. Alright, so I'm going to have a brief class today and give all of you opportunity to ask questions about the midterm material. Okay, so we'll leave the last 10-15 minutes for that. We'll also have special office hours on Monday. So the exam is on Tuesday. There is no class on Tuesday. Okay, just come for the exam in the evening. But I will have extra office hours on Monday in addition to the TA's office hours. Okay, just so that you can come ask questions. Six o'clock in this room. Okay, it's 90 minutes, and I'm assuming that most of you will be done before then. And if for some reason all of you are struggling to finish, we may extend the time, but I don't think it typically takes more than 90 minutes for the exam. Okay, I have blocked off the 2 hour slot, but the exam is officially for 90 minutes. Okay, alright. So, just continuing the discussion on memory management. So, this is a brief recap of what we did last time. Okay, so we started a new chapter, and or rather, this is a new component in the course. And the main item for discussion is how are processes handled in RAM by the operating system. Okay, last time we started with a very simple technique called uniprogramming, which allows you to essentially run one program or one process at a time. So there's only one process in memory at any given instant in addition to the operating system kernel. So very simple memory management technique. Very early versions of operating systems used uniprogramming. Okay? But most modern versions use multiprogramming, which allows multiple processes to run concurrently. And as a result, multiple processes have to be loaded in memory all at the same time. Okay? So we said, how do you go about doing that? We looked at this notion of relocation, okay, which allows you to load multiple processes or multiple address spaces in memory. And the main problem is one where you don't know at compile time where your process is going to be in memory. As a result, you cannot generate memory addresses at compile time. Okay? So the basic way to handle this is to do translate compiler generated addresses to somehow address physical memory location based on where the process is loaded. Okay, if you use the static relocation scheme, then you do this translation at load time. Okay, the compiler assumes that the process is going to be loaded at a certain location, let's say zero. Okay, in this case it shows the OS is here, but let's say OS is at the high memory. So you'll assume compile time, you assume that the process always starts at memory location 0. In reality, the process may be loaded at some arbitrary memory location. So if you're using static relocation, when you load the process here, you actually scan the assembly instruction and adjust any of the memory addresses by adding the base address. Okay, that basically allows you to generate physical addresses. On the other hand, if you use dynamic relocation, this translation is done in the hardware. Okay? The assembly instructions continue to address, produce logical addresses. You take the logical address, you add the base, and you generate a physical address at runtime. Okay? So we talked about all of this, and we also discussed this problem of fragmentation, which arises because processes come and go, and then you have these holes left in memory. Okay? And you may not have enough contiguous free space to load a new process. So what do? You can go and compact memory. Okay. So what we are going to do today is to look at a more intelligent memory management technique that eliminates this problem of fragmentation altogether. Okay. It allows you to load a process anywhere. Okay. And processes can come and go, and yet we don't have this problem of fragmentation or small holes. And the main observation or the reason why you need this new technique called paging is as follows. Okay. So, the main first observation is that it is wasteful to load this entire process in memory and keep it in memory at all times. Okay. The reason for this is that any given time your process is actually accessing only a small region of this memory. This is where the current instructions are that are being executed, as well as where the current stack frame is located. The rest of the memory region is not being accessed at this particular instant in time. At some later point in its execution, the process may go and start accessing other memory region. Okay? But if you take a snapshot in time, what you do observe is that processes typically do not use their entire space in memory at any given instant. Okay? So what this suggests is that you don't necessarily even have to keep the entire process in memory. You can only keep the part of that process that is currently being accessed in memory, and the rest of it can be fetched on demand. Okay? That is going to be the basis for the discussion. But I'm not going to talk about how to fetch pages on demand today. That we are going to defer to a lecture that will come after the midterm. Okay? But what we are going to do today is just start with how can you actually enable this technique which allows you to fetch pages, or rather fetch portions of memory that you need on demand and swap them out. Okay? So the fundamental technique is as follows. What you do is you take the address space of the process and you chop it up into fixed size chunks, okay, which we will refer to as a page. Let's say a page is 4 kilobytes in size. So you have a large process, you will chop it up into 4 kilobyte chunks. Okay? And then what we will do is we will selectively assign pages to frames in memory. Okay? So you will also take RAM and also chop it into 4K chunks. Okay? And then what you are going to do is you are going to match a 4K chunk of a process and load it into some 4K page or 4K frame. Okay? And this also allows us to move, remove or allocate pages as and when the need arises. Okay. This also eliminates the need, as we'll see in just one moment. This also eliminates the need to keep the process contiguous in memory. Okay. So just continuing on with the motivation. So the basic motivation is what I just said. It's just also specified with what is called the 90-10 rule. Processes spend 90% of their time accessing 10% of their memory region. Okay. So in most of the time, you're accessing a very small portion of your memory region. So there is no reason to keep all of those pages or all the entire memory of the process, rather the entire chunk of the process in memory at all given time. So keep only those parts that are actually being used. Okay? And pages also simplify the whole fitting problem. Okay? Because you have chopped up the process into 4 kilobyte chunks, all processes have a size that some multiple of whatever the page size is. In this case, I have assumed 4K, but it could be something else. Okay? And we'll see why you completely eliminate the problem of holes and fragmentation altogether just by doing this. Okay, in just one second. Okay? Now, the more important part is having chopped up the process into 4K chunks, we don't have to keep the process contiguous in memory. Okay? You can assign any page to any arbitrary frame. So the pages of a process will be scattered all over in memory. Okay? But we will actually have some mapping that allows you to figure out what part of a process is stored where in memory. Okay? So by doing this, the logical memory will stay contiguous, but physically the process is no longer contiguous in memory. Okay? And this also allows us to eliminate external fragmentation, but does not eliminate internal fragmentation. We'll come back to this point after the next slide. You still have internal fragmentation of half page per process, but let's ignore that for the moment. Here is how paging works. Okay? This is a process that you want to load in memory. That is main memory. Okay? So what you do is, this is the address space of the process. You chop it up into fixed size pages. Okay? In this case, the process has 6 pages A0 through A5. Okay? So this is the logical view of the process, and the logical view of the process is that it is contiguous. Okay? Now you can take any of this page and map it to any frame. Okay? Frame is same size as a page. So you will see that A0 get maps to frame F2. Okay? A1 got mapped to frame F11 and so on. So these arrows show where each page is stored in memory. So if you look at the actual layout in memory, first of all, the process is not contiguous. Okay, so you have A0, then you have A5, A4, there is something else here, A1, A3, A2. So the process is scattered all over in memory. Okay, this is how paging works. Okay, so you have chopped up the process and you're stored. Now this should make it clear why there is no external fragmentation if you do this. Okay, yes, question.
If you have a process, well, if you're chopping up into like 4 kilobyte
pages, yes.
And you have like a 5 kilobyte process, doesn't that make a block that uses a lot of memory?
Yes, so that is the problem of internal fragmentation. We'll come back to that, but let me answer your question. So you are saying page size is 4 KB, okay? Process size is, let's say, 5 or 13 or 5 KB. So this 5 KB process basically has two pages, okay? The first 4 KB of the page is in the, of the process is in the first page. You allocate a second page, but you only use the first 1 kilobyte of the page, and this is wasted. Okay. This is referred to as internal fragmentation, because last time what I said is if you allocate more memory to the process than it needs, then it has some unused region of memory, which we refer to as internal fragmentation. Okay. So paging is not going to eliminate internal fragmentation. It does eliminate external fragmentation. Okay. Yes, question.
Why is it
So we'll come back to internal. Let's forget about internal for just one moment. I'm just trying to convince all of you that there is no external fragmentation, and I want to make sure you understand why. And then we'll come to internal fragmentation, and I'll answer your question. Okay? Yes.
There's no external fragmentation because there's no reason. I mean, the process is split up into set size fragments or pages. There will always be the possibility to put something in that page.
There's no reason why it should be. So why does external fragmentation arise? External fragmentation arises if you have a hole that you cannot use for any process. It's too small to hold a process. Here you are allocating memory in fixed size chunk of frames. Okay? So there is never going to be, and you are also allowing the flexibility to put a page anywhere. Okay? It doesn't even have to be contiguous. So if you are allocating in fixed size chunks and you allow pages to go anywhere in RAM, it's clear that there is never going to be a case where you cannot use a hole. So here is a hole. Okay? F5 is a hole. Okay? But if you have any arbitrary process that needs a page, you can just put it there and make use of that region of memory. Okay? So you can always make use of any frame anywhere in memory. Okay? It doesn't matter whether the neighboring frames are free or not free, because you don't have to store the process contiguously. You are never going to have this problem of external fragmentation. Okay? So just by chopping up the process into fixed size chunks and allowing any chunk to be put anywhere in memory, we just got rid of the problem of external fragmentation. So you can make full use of your RAM. You will never waste RAM. Okay? From an external fragmentation standpoint. Okay, now let's come back to internal fragmentation. Okay. Although paging gets rid of the problem of external fragmentation, it is not going to get rid of this problem of internal fragmentation. Okay. Why is that? Okay, yes. Right. So you cannot dictate that a process size has to be a multiple of the page size. Process sizes will be arbitrary. Okay. But you are allocating memory in multiples of page sizes. Okay, so for example, in this case, your process size ended up as 5 kilobytes, okay, and then your page size is 4 kilobytes. Since you can only allocate in multiples of 4 KB, to accommodate this process, you basically allocated 8 kilobytes, which is 2 pages. Okay, so you gave it 3 kilobytes more than it needs. Okay, so in other words, the last page of the process is always going to have some unused space, okay, and that depends on whether the process is a multiple of the page size or not. If it's not a multiple of the page size, you will always waste some small region in the last page of the process. Okay? Because the last page will always be a 4 kilobyte page, but you don't use it all. In this case, the last page is the second page of the process. The first page is fully used. The second page is only, you only use the first 1 kilobyte of it. So if this was a 13 kilobyte process, for example, you would allocate it 16 kilobytes. Okay? So you will use 3 pages fully. Okay? And in the last page, you only use 1 kilobyte and you waste 3 KB, for example. Okay? So you are always on an average. Okay, if you look at if processes have random sizes that are uniformly distributed, on an average, you are going to waste half page per process. Yeah, because we'll assume that half of that last page is unused. Sometimes it will be more, sometimes it will be less, but on average you'll waste half page per process. So if you have n processes in your system, you've essentially wasted n over 2 pages of memory to internal fragmentation. But this is typically small, okay, because processes are large. Typical processes are sizes of megabytes or hundreds of megabytes. What you're wasting is maybe if you have a 4 kilobyte page, you waste 2 kilobytes per process. For a 100 megabyte process, this is negligible. Okay, so you can afford to ignore this problem, saying let's not worry about it. We got rid of external fragmentation, that is the bigger of the two. Okay, that was the question that was asked, why is eliminating external fragmentation more important than internal fragmentation? Because internal fragmentation is a very small fraction of the total memory. The external fragmentation is a bigger problem, and that we addressed. Okay. Yes.
Like, is there a benefit or disadvantage instead of making the fixed size page really small, or like generally do you want like how do they pick that size?
Yes. So I have not actually shown you. So let me answer that question. We'll come back to that in the discussion. How do you choose the page size? Yeah, that's the question. So should it be large or small? Okay. The advantages if you have a small page. The advantage is you will reduce, any page size reduces external fragmentation, that should be clear. Okay, because whatever the page size is, you are allowing the page to be anywhere in memory, so no external fragmentation. The only thing that you are not eliminating is internal fragmentation. So the larger the page, the more you are going to have internal fragmentation. But typically this is not something that we worry about because I said it's still going to be small. Okay. Page sizes typically tend to be in small number of kilobytes. Okay, so you have 1 to 8 KB pages. Some machines may have 16 kilobyte pages. They tend to be still on the small side, in range of a few kilobytes or low tens of kilobytes. Processes tend to be in megabytes or tens or hundreds of megabytes. Okay, and I'll talk about what this means. Okay, why having, so although there's this problem of internal or external fragmentation, having larger pages reduces the data structure the OS has to maintain. Okay, and I'll come to that. But it should be clear that somebody has to keep track of what page is where. That somebody is the operating system. Okay, so this mapping has to be maintained. Otherwise, you will not know if I want to access that page, where is it in RAM, because things are no longer contiguous. Okay, so there are tables that are maintained which are called page tables. And the larger the page, the smaller is the size of that data structure or page table. That's the trade-off. Okay, large pages have more internal fragmentation, but it reduces the size of the page table because you have fewer pages overall. Okay, so I will come to page tables in just one moment. Are there other questions here? Okay. So it should be clear that paging allows you to get rid of external fragmentation. You don't get rid of internal fragmentation, but we argued that that's small, so it's okay to ignore that problem. Okay. Now we will see what does the operating system have to do to enable this. Okay. What is the support you need in hardware? What are the data structures you need to maintain? Okay, that's what we'll talk about next. Okay, so to understand this, now let's go back to our problem of addressing. Okay, it all comes down to addressing. So now your process is no longer contiguous in memory, but it thinks it is. As far as the process is concerned, it hasn't changed. It assumes for whatever reason it is contiguous in memory. So it is going to generate logical addresses, assuming that is actually stored like this in RAM. But it is actually stored like that. Okay? So you have to translate between virtual or logical addresses to physical addresses. Okay? So if I want to now access my page, some byte in page A1, I need to translate that and figure out that that is actually frame F6 and some offset in that page. Somebody has to do this translation. Whenever the process accesses this byte, you have to map that here and say go access that byte. Okay, for all of the addressing to work transparently. Okay. So the way virtual address, so the way this is going to work is the processes will still generate virtual addresses. There is no way for the process to generate physical addresses. Okay. Because the compiler not only doesn't know where pages are going to be mapped, at compile time you have no idea where a particular page is going to be mapped in memory. That depends on the current usage of memory and what pages are free. Okay, the OS is going to just allocate your pages to whatever frames are currently free in memory. So compiler doesn't know. Okay. So compiler can only assume that the pages are stored contiguously, and it will just generate virtual addresses as if the process is stored contiguously. Okay. So you will, processes will continue to generate contiguous virtual addresses that go from zero to size of the process. Okay. So the, in this case, the addresses are going to go from zero to this byte. Okay. That's the size of this process. That's what the process can actually address. Okay. So the OS is now going to chop up this process into pages. Okay. It is going to then map these pages to frames, and it is going to have some tables which we will refer to as page tables, and use some hardware to do this translation on the fly, transparently to the process. Process doesn't know. Process is just going to address logical addresses, and the hardware will automatically ensure that the right address in physical memory gets accessed. Okay. So what we have is a data structure called a page table that maintains a mapping from pages to frames for each process. Okay, you have to do this on a per process basis. For every process, you have to capture this mapping. Okay, there may be another process here which may be mapped to some of these other empty frames, for example. So for each process, you have this page table. The page table says, you can go into the page table and say, where is my third page? And it will say, go look up, in this case, go look up frame 11. That's where it is. So that's what you keep in the page table. Okay, I'll show you a picture in just 1 second. So here is what happens. Okay. So what you do is the process generates a virtual address. Okay. So this virtual address now has two parts. Okay. It has a page number and an offset within the page. Okay. So addresses look like this. Page number and an offset. So you cannot just say, go to the third page, access the fifth byte. So that's what that address is going to look like. Or you go to the 10th page, access 0th byte. Okay? That's what it generates. So there is a P and a D. Okay? D is the offset, P is the page number. So logical addresses or virtual addresses look like a page number and an offset. So the offset you just ignore. What you do is you take the page number and you do a lookup in the page table. Page table is simply an array. Okay? For each page number, it tells you which frame does it map to. That was the mapping that I just showed. So if this is page P, you actually look up the Pth entry here, and that tells you that this page is stored at this frame in physical memory. Okay. So you do this lookup, you get F, and then you replace P with F. So this is your physical address. Right? If you want to go to page P and look at offset D, instead go to frame F and look at offset D within that page. Okay. That gives you the actual memory location where that page is mapped to. Okay. So long as the operating system keeps this table, okay, you can just do this translation, and there is hardware support to do this. You do this translation on the fly. The process just continues to generate virtual addresses without knowing where pages are actually stored in memory, and you do a page table lookup to basically map pages to frames. The offset doesn't change within the page. Okay, if you are looking at the fifth byte of the page, it's still going to be the fifth byte of the page. Okay, is this clear? Questions here? Okay. So you need hardware support to do this. Okay. Otherwise, you cannot just assume that the hardware will do this automatically. So what kind of support do we need? Okay. So what you should think of paging as a way of dynamic relocation. Okay. If you remember what we said last time, dynamic relocation allows you to put a process anywhere in memory. And you have a base register that basically takes a virtual address and just adds the base address to that virtual address and gives you the physical address. Okay. So now you think of this as a generalization of dynamic relocation, where the page table is a set of relocation registers, one for each page. For each page, you are getting an offset. The offset is the frame number that the page is stored in. So all you do is you take the page number, you get the frame number, which is the offset for the, which is the actual location of the page, and you just add the offset that gives you the actual physical address. Okay? This entire mapping is completely invisible to the process. Process doesn't even know that there is a page table or there's paging. Okay? It believes that it is actually stored contiguously in RAM. Okay? This is the abstraction you give to the process. Okay? And underneath you do all this additional translation for it to all work out. Okay, so the OS has to keep this mapping. Okay, the OS has to maintain the page table, and we'll see the hardware that you use to do this. Okay, and you do the protection in the same way. You have limit registers to ensure that you do not go and access somebody else's RAM, for example. If you only have 10 pages, if you try to access the 11th page, you give an error saying you only have 10 pages in your page table. Try to access that, then that is an invalid memory access. Okay, so you will still do protection the same way. Okay. So here now, so where do these page numbers and offset come from? Okay, so for this we need to understand how paging works. Okay. So we'll assume that page sizes are always some multiples of 2. Okay, so you can have typically 512 byte pages, 1024 bytes, which is 1 kilobyte, or 2 kilobytes, 4, 8, 16. Okay. And this is done for convenience, as we will see. You don't have to restrict it, but doing so allows you to do the addressing in a very simple way. Okay. So powers of 2 make the, not multiples, rather powers of 2. Okay. So powers of 2 make the translation of virtual to physical addresses very easy. Okay. So for example, if your virtual addresses are m bytes in or 2 to the m bytes, which is you can represent it with m bits, okay, and the page size is 2 to the power n, then if I just give you any virtual address, you should be able to extract the page number and the offset within the page from that value. Okay. Very simply, the high order m minus n bits are the page number, and the low order n bits are the offset within the page. Okay, I'll show you an example to show you why this is true. Okay. So in reality, in other words, in reality, the process is not generating a page number and an offset as a pair. It is just generating an offset, okay, from the beginning of the process, and you extract the page number and the offset by saying the high order bits give you the page number and the low order bits give you the offset. Okay. If this is m bytes in m bits in size, then the offset will be the n low order bits, assuming the page size is 2 to the power n, and this is the upper m minus n bits. Okay, that's exactly what is shown there. We'll do an example to make this more concrete. Okay. So here is basically our example. Okay. It's actually the same example I showed, but now with a page table. Earlier I just shown arrows, but that arrows, those arrows have now been replaced by a page table. Okay. So those are, now it's actually a smaller process. There are only 4 pages, A0, A1, A2, A3. That's the page table. That says A0 maps to frame F2. A1, which is the first entry here, maps to frame F6. A2 goes to 11, A3 goes to 9. Again, the process is not contiguous, scattered in memory. Okay. We'll assume that the memory size is 256 bytes. Okay. And pay this simple toy example, and each page is 16 bytes in size. Okay, so size of a page, this thing is 16 bytes. Okay, and the size of RAM is 256 bytes. Okay, and this process has 4 pages. Okay, and that's the mapping. Okay, and we'll see. We'll do some problems. Is this clear? This picture clear? Any questions on this? Okay. So here are some questions. So how big is the page table? That's the first question there.
It's equal to the size of the number of F entries.
Yeah.
The frames in memory. Or it can be no larger than the frames in memory.
Yeah. So the page table cannot exceed the number of frames you have in this case. Okay, in this particular case, the page table has only 4 entries. Okay, so for this process, the page table has 4 entries, or page table has size of 4. Okay. But in practice, unless you allow the process to grow bigger than the size of RAM, the page table cannot exceed the number of frames you have in memory. Okay, that will impose a limit on the size of the process. Yeah, so that's the first question. Second question is, how many bits do you have for an address? So what is the range of your memory addresses in the worst case? Sorry, somebody said something.
Can you say that one more time? What's the
how many bits do you have in a memory address for this hardware? The 256 bytes. Yeah. So process cannot be bigger than 256 bytes. So what does the process have to address? What can the range of memory addresses be? So 256 bytes in RAM. What can your address? How long? What is the maximum thing you can address? 255, right? 0 to 255. Those are the memory addresses in RAM. Okay. So the maximum address that you can generate is 255. How many bits do you need to do that? Log 2 arithmetic. 8 bits. So memory addresses have to be 8 bits. Okay, in order for you to address 0 to 255, you need 8 bit addresses. So this is an 8 bit machine. Okay, so all addresses basically will be 8 bits in size that you can generate, because the worst case process size has to be 256 bytes. That process can generate addresses that go from 0 to 255. So this is an 8 bit address. Okay.
Now you're
so
saying that's in the page table, it uses
8
bits as an offset?
No.
Okay.
I haven't even brought the page table. I'm just forget the page table. I just asked the question, if you have memory size of 256, what should be the size of an address? Okay, it has to be an 8-bit address to in order to address all of the bytes in memory. That's all. So we haven't even talked about page table. This is sort of a very, very simple, trivial question. Okay. Okay. So next question is, if the page size is 16 bytes in size, what will be the size of P and what will be the size of D? So what we are going to now do is take this 8-bit address and chop it into two parts, a page number and an offset. Okay? So we'll basically say this 8-bit address has two components. One component gives you the page number and another component gives you the offset, the P and the D. Okay? So now the question is, if the page size is 16 bytes, what should be the offset? Okay, how many bits should the offset be? 4 bits. Is that clear why? Okay, because the offset has to go within a page. You can go, offsets can go from 0 to 15 because it's a 16 byte page. Okay? So to address 0 to 16 you need 4 bits. Okay, so the page, in this case the offset is 4 bits. Okay, and then you have the page itself, which is the other 4 bits. So the high order 4 bits as gives you the page number, the low order 4 bits gives you the offset. Yes, so that's clear, right? It's because there can only have 16 frames that go from F0 to F15. So your page table can be at most 16 entries long. So you need 4 bits to represent all of that. Okay? Alright. So which part is P, which part is D? The high order 4 bits are P, the low order 4 bits are D. So now we are actually going to do what the hardware does for it. Okay, we are going to do this by hand. Let's assume the process generated virtual address 24. Okay, let's go back here. So process wants to address virtual address 24. Okay, we want to do a translation to a physical address. How do we go about doing that? So there are two ways to think about it. Okay? One way is you basically just write out 24 in binary. Okay? You write out the bits and then you just chop it up into P and D. Okay? Whatever happens to be on this side gives you the page number. Whatever happens to be on this side gives you the offset. Okay? Another better way of thinking about it is to say, if I generate virtual address 24 and have 16 byte pages, where does virtual address 24 fall?
Well,
it is going to fall in the second page. Okay? Because the first page has the first 16 bytes and the second page has byte number 24. Okay? So it's going to be in the second page and it's going to be the 8th offset within that page. Okay? Because the first page goes from 0 to 15. Okay. So basically what you do is you basically, if you divide this by the page size, you will get the page number. Okay, that tells you which page it is on, and if you do 24 mod 16, that gives you the offset. That's exactly what this is doing in binary. Okay. So that's why you basically, if you write that out, it gives, does the same thing. Okay. So virtual address 24 is basically page 1, offset 8. Okay. P is 1, D is 8. Okay. But that's, we are not done yet. We have to still translate that to physical address. So now you basically do what that picture showed you, this picture. So you generated a P and you generated a D. Okay? So you take the P, you do a page table lookup and you get an F. That's what we are going to do. So you say you want to take 1,8 and figure out what frame it is. Okay? So you look up the first entry, that's page frame 6. So virtual address 24 is basically frame 6, offset 8. Okay, this is what the hardware is doing automatically for you, but it's worthwhile to go through this exercise to know what the hardware did and why it did that. Okay, is this clear? So that's basically, if the process generates 24, this is what you are going to do. First figure out, to understand that, you first figure out what is the page number and what's the offset within the page. Okay. Then you look up that page number in the page table and you replace it with the frame number. So 1,8 translates to 6,8. Okay. That's the physical location of that byte for that process. Okay? Any questions here? Everything clear? Okay, so now we are going to do another example. So here we have assumed that you can actually directly address every byte of memory. Okay. So now I'll take a more realistic case and assume that you can address in 4 byte increments. Can't address every byte, but you can address byte 0, byte 4, byte 12 and so on. So you can assume that that's the way memory is built. Okay. Is this clear what I just said? Rather than being able to address at the byte level, you can address 4 bytes at a time. So you can't address anything finer than that. Okay, is this clear? Okay. Same example, but now you assume that addressing works in 4 byte increments. Okay. So does that change the size of the page table? Page size hasn't changed. Okay. Page size hasn't changed, the size of the page table hasn't changed. Okay. You still have 16 pages in memory. Okay. Yes, question.
Would it change it if the page size wasn't 1,4?
Yes. Well, exactly. So you had asked the question, what about the page size, right? So if page size was made 32 bytes, you only have 8 pages in memory. Instead of, so then the page table can only, maximum size of the page table is 8 entries, not 16. If the page size was 8 bytes, you have 32 pages. Okay, so your page table increases. Okay, so the size of the page has a direct implication on the maximum size of the page table you may have to maintain. Okay, that was the same question you asked, saying if this changes, then will the page table change? Yes, the page table will change.
If it wasn't a multiple of 4,
yeah, it doesn't have to be, but if it's,
you're addressing, you when you said the combined address is right. 4 bits,
so I'll come back to the combined address being 4 bits. So what does this do? The combined address is 4 bits, then let's take a page. Okay, now we are not looking at all of memory, but we are just looking at an individual page. The page has 16 bytes, byte 0 to byte 15. Okay, if you could address it, so there are 16 bytes here. Okay. If you could address individual bytes, then you can go and just read this byte, or you can go and read that byte and so on. Okay. So if you can address in 4 byte increments, what does that mean from this perspective? Yes, so you basically address this, these four bytes together. Okay? Or you can address the bytes 4 through 7. Or 7 through 11. So there are only four things you can address within a page. Okay? Because you are addressing four bytes all at once. Okay? So in this, what are the values of offsets you can have in this case? If you are addressing 4 byte increments, then your offsets are going to be 0, 1, 2 and 3. These are the only addresses you can generate within a page. Okay? When you generate address 0, you basically address the first 4 bytes. When you generate address 1, you generate address the next 4 bytes and so on. Okay? So the P part of our address hasn't changed here. Okay? The number of pages is still 16, but the offset part has changed. Okay. Offsets cannot no longer go from 0 through 16, which they did if you could address individual bytes. Offsets only go from 0 to 3. Okay. So that basically says that now you have 2 bits for the offset and you have 6 bit addresses. Okay. Addressing the same memory, except that the addressing is now more coarse grain. You cannot address individual bytes. You can address basically longs. Okay? Long being 32 bit integers. Okay, is this clear? What we just did here? Okay. Is there a benefit to doing it this way? So, modern architecture, if you go 64 bit and 32 bit architectures, what they do is they don't allow you addressing at individual byte granularity. That's too coarse, fine grain to address. They allow you to address larger regions of memory. You can address either 16 or 32 bytes at a time. Here we did an example with 32 bytes. Okay. So registers are also longer. You can have 16 or 32 bit registers. So you would read a 32 bit region of memory and just stick it into a 32 bit register. You can't do finer grain than that. That's the reason this thing is too. Okay, so modern architectures have this for that reason, because they have longer registers, so you have to address longer parts of memory, regions of memory. Okay. Yes.
Why does that change to a 6-bit address instead of making it 8
or left out? This one?
Yeah.
Because the offsets can only go within a page. The offset can be either 0, 1, 2 or 3. Okay? So if the offset goes from 0 to 3, you only need 2 bits to figure that out. Right? This 0, 0, this 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1. So you need only 2 bits for the offset.
So why wouldn't the left half get bigger?
Because the left half is determined by the number of pages you have in memory.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it is not, because you cannot address. So it basically what you have done is you have eliminated certain addresses. You say, I will not let the hardware generate these addresses. Then I will not let them do 4, 5, 6, 7. I can only let you do 0, 4, 8 or 12. Okay. So you need fewer bits to generate those addresses. Yes.
Now, is this something that's static for the operating system? Or not static, but is determined for the operating system at first for memory addressing?
Like this is determined by the hardware. This has nothing to do with the operating system. The hardware allows you to address bytes. This is very much dependent by the architecture. What is the processor allowing you to address? Okay. So the processor allows you to address individual bytes, then you need bigger addresses. Okay. If you can only address at 4 or 2 byte increment, then you need shorter addresses. That's all. Yeah, the operating system plays no role here. I mean, it is doing what the hardware is allowing it to do. Okay? Yes?
What about this where you have 64-bit architecture, but then you install, say, a 32-bit operating system? You still have that limitation?
Right.
Or is that a virtual limitation?
Right. So, that's a slightly different scenario. So, if you have a more capable hardware, but the operating system doesn't take advantage of the hardware, that essentially means that it is ignoring high order bits in the registers. It's not using them. Okay? That's something different. So you have 64-bit hardware, you'll have 64-bit registers. but the operating system is still 32 bit. It is basically only using the left half of the register and never using these parts. So these are always zeros. So that means you cannot address 64 bit memory. Okay? You only address 32 bit memory. That places a limit on the size of RAM. This is why if you have a 32 bit operating system, the RAM sizes cannot go beyond 16 GB or something like that. Okay, but if you have a 64 bit operating system, your RAM size can be up to a terabyte, because you can address 0 to 2 to the power 64. Your addresses can go that high. So those are all the reasons. So that's a different case where the operating system is not making use of the hardware. Here the hardware has put some restrictions on what you can address. So the operating system cannot do anything about it. Okay, so slightly different scenarios. Yes, question?
Actually, question from Apple.
Okay. So last question then is, if you have six bit thing, so if you have virtual address 13, what does that mean for us now? Okay, so you want to translate virtual address 13 to a physical address. Okay, so let me erase this. There's too much clutter on the board. Yes, 6 bit. So one way to do this very simply is to translate that virtual address into a real byte offset. Okay? So if you think about the physical memories, virtual address 0 is addressing byte number 0. Virtual address 1 is addressing byte 4 of this process. Virtual address 2 is addressing byte number 8. 3 is addressing byte number 12 and so on. Okay? Because you can address in 4 byte increment. So one thing you can do is, did I say 16 or what did I say? Yes.
13. So
13. Yes, exactly. So first what you can do is first figure out the byte offset, which is this. Okay. So virtual address 16, or rather 13, is addressing byte number 52. Okay, in this memory of the process. So then you do the normal translation. Byte number 52 is in which page, if you have 16 byte pages? In the fourth page. Okay, the offset within the page is 4. The fourth page is actually 3. Okay, because you start from 0. Okay, so that's 3. D is 1 because the fourth byte is virtual address 1 within that. Okay, is that clear? So that's how you would go about doing it. So then the rest is simple. You just take a P and map it to F. So you got P of 3. We'll go to the page table. Okay. Just look up that entry that gives you 9. So then you basically get 9, 1. Is this clear what we just did? It's a slightly more complicated example, but it's basically doing the same thing. Any questions on this? Okay, so now let's look at how do you actually store these page tables. Where would you store these page tables in hardware? Okay, so you have to maintain this mapping now. For every process, you have to keep this table, which the operating system is going to maintain. Okay, so where would you put it? What are some options we have on the table?
Hard disk
is a problem. You don't want to put anything on hard disk.
Don't they the processors have caches?
Yes, they will have caches. So we'll come to that. But assuming you didn't know what a cache was, where would you put it? So you have two options, right? You can put it in registers or you can put it in memory. Those are the two places you would store any data. This is also data. It just happens to be a page table. So if I tell you where do you want to put this data, you have two choices. You put it in RAM or you put it in registers. Okay? So what are the advantages and disadvantages of doing this? Okay? Let's suppose you put it in registers. You store the page table in a set of registers. What's the advantage of doing this? Yes?
Well, you limit the full number of registers you have.
Yeah.
But then your game ends up being a very quick operation, right?
Yes. So if you store the page table in registers, page table lookups are very fast because register lookups are fast. Register is very fast memory. Okay? But you only have a limited number of registers on any hardware. Okay? So if your page table size is going to be limited by the number of registers you have, okay, which is not a good thing. Okay, if you have 32 registers, you can't say I am going to let my process have 32 pages. Okay, then the process cannot be greater than 1 megabyte in size, for example. Okay, if your process is tens or hundreds of megabytes, you are going to have thousands of pages for that process. Maybe tens of thousands of pages. You are never going to have 10,000 registers on any machine. Okay? So although storing the page table in registers makes lookups fast, you never have enough registers to store the page table. Okay? So that option is not going to work. Okay? So then you say, let's put it in RAM. Okay? The operating system is stored in some region of memory. The operating system allocates some of its memory to store the page table. Okay. Now there is no longer a limit. If you want 10,000 entries, you have an array of size 10,000. Okay. And that's your page table. Okay. So that will work, but what's the problem with this approach? Yes.
Access to RAMs, a slow operation, and access to your registers.
Yes. Access to RAM is slower than access to registers. So page table lookups are going to be slow. Okay. In fact, you are going to have factor of 2 slowdown. Okay. Because why do we need the page table? We need the page table so a process can address its memory location. Okay. But in order to figure out which memory location to address, I have to do another memory lookup to first look up the page table. Okay. So to address any memory location, I need two memory accesses. One to first look up the page table and then to actually look up that memory location. So I've basically halved my memory access speed. Okay, if your memory has a certain speed, I'm going to operate at half that speed. Okay, which is also not a good thing. Okay, because your throughput has suddenly dropped by half because every memory access is slowed down by a factor of 2. Because you have to do 2 accesses. You can't directly go and look up that address because first I have to go look up the page table, which is also in memory. Okay, so you can have a slow machine or you can have very small processes. So what is the in between? You don't like either of those options. So, yeah. So basically what you have is the in between solution, which is called a TLB. It's actually a cache. Okay. So there's special hardware on the machine to store the page table. Okay. This is called the translation look aside buffer or the TLB. Okay. All it is doing this translation. You give it a page table, it gives you the frame number. It's a special hardware built just to do this translation. So you don't use general purpose registers, neither do you use, I shouldn't say you don't use RAM, you will use RAM. But most of your page table accesses are actually going to be TLB lookups. Okay? It's also called fully associative memory, where you can give it the page number and it will tell you the frame where it is stored. Okay? Now, again, TLB is faster than main memory. Okay, otherwise, there is no point of having the TLB. Okay? But you cannot have unlimited size TLBs. Okay? So TLBs are going to be still small. So they can have between 8 and 2048 entries. Meaning, this is almost like saying I have between 8 and 2000 registers. I have basically a cache size of 2048. Okay? Yet, I don't want to restrict my process to that size. I want the process size to be arbitrary, but I only have a TLB of 2048 entries and I still want it to all work. Okay? How can you do that? So here is basically what is actually done. Okay? What you do is you do store the page table in main memory. Okay? Page table is stored in main memory by the operating system kernel. In fact, it is stored in the process control block, the PCB. Okay, that we talked about when I presented scheduling, said there's a entry for each process, it's called a process control block. It keeps a lot of information, it also stores the page table. Okay. So although the process page table is stored in memory, what we are going to do is we are going to say what part of the memory is this process currently accessing. Okay? And remember the 90-10 rule. 90-10 rule says on 90% of the time, I'm only going to access 10% of my memory. Okay? So if I only store those page table entries that I'm currently accessing in the TLB, okay, lookups are still going to be very fast. Okay, is this clear what I just said? The TLB is much smaller than the page table. Page table can have maybe tens or thousands of entries. Your TLBs may have 100 entries. Okay? But I only keep the part of the page table that I'm currently accessing in the TLB. The pages that I'm currently accessing are stored in the TLB. The rest of those pages are stored in main memory. Okay? So if the pages I'm actually accessing are in the TLB, what I'm going to do is I want to translate P to F. I look up P in the page table, in the TLB. Okay? If that entry, if this page table entry is already in the TLB, I go at what's called a TLB hit or a cache hit, and I immediately do the translation. And this is happening almost at register speeds. Okay, so no slowdown. Okay? Occasionally, I'm going to access the page that is not cached in the TLB. Okay? So I look up the TLB and I get what's called a TLB miss. Okay? So then I have to go back to the main memory and actually get that entry. Okay, I do the translation, but I take that entry and I stick it into the TLB and I throw out some other entry. Okay? So if you have what is called locality of reference, okay, this is how processes access memory. Even if I access a memory region now, it's very likely I'm going to access it again in the near future. Okay, this is where the 90-10 rule comes from. Okay, and why is this true? Think of, let's say you're accessing a linked list or an array. Okay? Typically what you're going to do is if you're accessing a linked list, you're going to sequentially scan the linked list. Okay? So if I access entry I, next time I access either entry I plus 1 or I minus 1. Okay? And that is likely to be stored very close to where this entry is stored. Okay? So if I access this memory region, I'm going to access some memory region that's close to it, which may probably be the same page or pages nearby. Okay? So that's what I said. So in most of the time you're accessing a small part of your address space. If those page table entries are in your in the TLB, then page table lookups are very fast. Occasionally, however, you are going to have a TLB miss. Okay, because no, you cannot predict ahead of time what you're going to access. In that case, you go and fetch that entry. Okay, and then any subsequent accesses to that page are going to be TLB hits. Yes, question.
So with the TLB always stateful,
yes. So basically, so we'll talk about how the TLB gets filled up. Okay? So when a new process starts up, the page table is initialized, but the TLB is empty. Okay? First time there's a memory access, okay? You look in the TLB, whatever that page is, it's going to be a miss because TLB is empty. Go to the page table, you come and get an entry out. Okay? And then you stick one in, so that, but the rest of the TLB is empty. So after some number of misses, the TLB will be all filled up. Okay? And then you will keep accessing those entries. At some later point, there will be another miss because you are accessing a page that's not cached in the TLB. Okay, then you will go and get that page and then you have to evict something. Okay? There are well-known policies like the least recently used. If you want to throw out a TLB entry, you throw out the oldest entry. Okay? So keep the newer ones because those are the more likely ones I'm going to access. Okay, so we'll come back to what this is called the least recently used eviction policy. When we do caching in more detail, we'll come back to this. So you'll always keep it full and you'll keep the newest entries there. Those are the most likely entries you will access again. And that's the reason you're going to mostly get TLB hits and few misses. Okay, question.
How do levels of cache work? Like, is level 1 have the most used like page? Like level 2, slightly less used page?
Right. So, question is how do caches work? Right, level 1 cache and level 2 cache and a level 3 cache. Okay? The TLB is not the same as a level 1 and level 2 and level 3 cache. Okay? TLB is basically a cache for the page table. Okay? L1, L2 and L3 caches are cache for the actual memory pages themselves. Okay? So eventually I'm going to look up this and then I'm going to go look up the memory region. But that's also slow because memory access is slow. So you will actually store that entries, those entries also in a cache. Those are the L1, L2, L3 caches. So typically in the fast case, what will happen is you'll generate a memory address that will be a TLB hit that will map to a frame number and an offset. But instead of going to main memory and accessing it, you may get a level 1 hit because you already accessed that and it's in my cache. So I don't have memory access anywhere on the fast path. Okay, so my accesses become very fast. Okay, so the L1, L2, L3 caches, cache memory pages. The TLB caches, page table entries. Okay, both are caches, but they are used for different things. Okay, is this clear? Yes, your question.
The operating system is physical addresses defined the TLB memory.
Operating system uses physical addresses. This is exactly what it does, is what is shown in this picture. You generate the virtual address, get a page table, a page number and an offset. Okay. Then you look up this page number in the TLB. This is associative memory.
I just mean when you're trying to add a new entry to that table, it's memory.
Yes. Meaning one of this goes in there.
Yeah, how does the operating system look up that entry stored in there?
How does it look up this entry? Because this is page table. It's stored in main memory. Oh, this can be stored as an array or a linked list. How this data structure is stored is not material. You think of it as an array. It could be as simple as that. Okay, so page table is an array. So if you have, you just declare this. Okay, this is a kernel data structure. It just happens to be an array inside the kernel. Okay, so to look up the ith entry or to look up p, I'll just do this. And that will give me the frame number. It's done. So very simple. Okay, so then that is stored in the process control block. So you know where it is in memory. Is that clear or not clear?
So if you think the address, what sort of address do you use in order to find that like where PT resides? Do you use physical or logical address?
No, so don't think of physical or logical. Assume that you're writing the operating system in C. Okay, which is, let's say Linux is written in C. So what are you going to do? You're basically going to declare a process control block. This is a struct. Okay? This is an entry in the struct. Okay. So the way you basically do is you will go into PCB and you will address it by the process ID because there's one entry for every process. Okay. And then you will basically say look up the page table and you will look up the page number. This is the way you will actually address it. Okay. Then the compiler will generate some assembly instructions for this. I think all this is written in a high level language, right? So you will actually declare the page table as an array. And you will access the pth entry of that array. How the compiler generates machine code is exactly the way you access any array. Okay? So you have to keep track of where that variable is stored in memory and all of that. But the compiler does that for any program, it does the same thing for the kernel. Okay? Yes, question.
In C++, I know that sometimes if you have like a short function, you can declare it in line.
Yes.
Is the motivation behind that so that you're less likely to leak the current page where it's executed?
Is the motivation. So if you have inline functions, the motivation for that is performance, for sure. Is that related to paging? It is only tangentially related to paging. Inline functions are like macros, where you basically don't have to go and make a function call. It's more to allow, get rid of that over it. Yes. But to some extent, you will get paging benefit because the code will be generated there and you may not have to go and access some other page. Okay. But that's not the primary motivation. You will get some benefit. Okay. So anyway, so the big picture is there is this TLB. So what was the goal? Goal was to have fast page table lookups. The way that is done is you keep the main page table in memory, in the kernel data structure, the PCB, and you keep the most recently accessed entries in the TLB, which is a cache. So whenever you generate an address, you first see is that paste already in the TLB. If so, you get the frame number, you're done. Otherwise, you go down this path. You have a TLB miss, you access this entry, you bring it into the TLB, and you also get F and do the addressing. Okay. Yes. Question.
This would all be initiated from a load instruction, right? Or an instruction from the CPU, right?
The addressing, you mean?
Yeah, the addressing.
Right. So that address is generated by some assembly instruction, right? So you may do load and specify a memory address. Right? that generates that address.
That generates the virtual address.
Yes, or you may say add mn. So there are these two addresses and you want to add m to n. So this instruction is going to generate these two addresses. So then you have to do the translation to figure out where m and n are actually stored in memory. So that's all of this logic. Okay? Alright. So, costs of using the TLB. So if there is, as I already mentioned, if the entire page table is in memory, the effective memory access is twice of memory access. One memory access to the page table, one real memory access location. That's slow. Okay? But if you put a TLB, this is what you end up with. Okay? So assume that P is the probability of a cache hit. Okay? So if you have a hit, then you basically have a TLB lookup and you have actually memory location lookup. So once you get the actual address, you'll go and address the memory. Okay? If you have a TLB miss, okay, you access the TLB, there was nothing there that you wanted. You go to the page table, you get that entry, okay, and then you actually address the memory location. So there are two memory accesses plus a TLB access if you have a miss. Okay, that is what I showed here. Yeah, so in the miss, you first do that lookup. That was a miss, that's TLB. You do this memory lookup, you get F, and then you go to that memory. So there's that memory access, this memory access, and a TLB access. Okay? That's this. Two memory accesses plus a TLB access. In a hit, you get this case. Okay? So typically the value of P, the probability of a hit, is high. Right? Let's say greater than 90%. So more than 90% of the time, you are basically getting very fast accesses, and in a small fraction of the time you are getting slow accesses where you have misses. Okay? So this is going to be substantially faster than just having two memory accesses all the time. Okay? So by putting a TLB, you have vastly improved the performance of your hardware. Okay? Yes, question there.
How much less is a TLB lookup than a memory?
Okay, so how much less? So typically registers are order of magnitude or two orders of magnitude faster than main memory. Okay, maybe 10 to 100 times faster. So this value is going to be either 1/10 or less than of that value. So if you have 2 times MA, this will be 1.1 or 1.01 times MA. So it's very fast. Yes?
Now, the TLB, is that hardware located on the memory, like say you were to install a new like a block of RAM into your computer.
Yes.
Is the TLB going to be on that? Or
no. TLB is on the processor, typically, not on the RAM.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So here is what happens now. So if you have a new process, okay, so you're basically going back to the big picture. So you start a new process, it needs K pages. Okay? Since you are doing paging, these K pages don't have to be contiguous. All you have to do is figure out K frames that are currently unused. Okay? So pick any K frames, doesn't matter where they are, just so long as you have K frames, you can basically go ahead and start this process up. So each of these frames is mapped to a page. So process puts the OS puts each page in a frame, and then that mapping is now put as a page table entry. Okay? So once you have loaded all K pages in memory, you have a page table with K entries, and you have all the pages are in main memory. Okay? They are not contiguous, but the page table tells you where they are. Okay? At this point, the process has just started up. Okay? There is nothing in the TLB, so you basically take all the old entries and you flush them. Any previous processes may have left entries in that cache, just flush the TLB. Okay? It's called a TLB flush, and then you start the process. Okay? Now, as each instruction is executed, instructions generate memory addresses like load instructions or add instructions. Okay? These memory addresses will be first, you do a TLB lookup for each memory address. If there is a miss, go to the main page table, get those entries. After a while, your TLB is going to be full, okay, whatever you have. And from this point on, hopefully, your process starts executing faster. Okay, until then, you are basically doing two memory accesses for every TLB miss. So when the process starts up, it starts slowly because every memory access is going to be slow. Okay? But once the TLB fills up, because of this reference locality, you will basically have faster memory access. Occasionally, you will have misses, and then you will bring in a new entry into the TLB and throw away the oldest one. Okay, this is how the process keeps executing. Now, the process is also scheduled on and off the CPU by the CPU scheduler. Okay, so every time the process is context switched out, meaning its time slice ends, you have to now take the TLB. So basically, you have to have the page table in the process control block and possibly a copy of the TLB. So every time you context switch out, you take all the TLB entries, okay, and you also store them in the process control block. So the next time you start up, you don't start with a cold TLB. Okay, you already have those entries, you reload them into the TLB. Okay. So on a context switch, you copy the page table base register to the PCB. You optionally copy the TLB. This is an optional step, not a required step. This is a performance enhancement. Okay. You didn't copy the TLB, the next time you run, you again start with an empty TLB. So you will again have a few misses. But if you did copy it and restore the TLB, so the next time you start up, meaning the next time you run, your TLB is already full, so you can actually run fast. Okay? So you do this, you flush the TLB, you pick a new process, you load its page table registers, you restore its TLB if it was saved, okay? And then you are done. Okay? So there is this notion of multi-level paging, which I am not going to talk about today, we will come back to next time. Okay? When you have very large processes, even your page table isn't a single level system, it's a two-level structure. Okay. If you do this, there are additional steps you have to do on a context switch, which we will ignore for today. Okay. The only last thing I'll mention, but we'll come back to this, is that paging allows you to share memory regions across processes. Okay. And I'll just leave this, show you why and leave it at that. If you have, let's go back to our old picture. Okay. So it's very trivial to share memory if you have paging. You just take a frame, okay, and you map it into multiple page tables. You can have another process here and one of its pages also maps to this same frame. Okay, and you have basically shared this memory across two processes. That's all you have to do to share memory across processes. Just take a physical frame and you have two page tables both pointing to that same entry. Okay, and that frame is then shared by these two processes. This allows you to do a lot of optimization. So you can actually share libraries across multiple processes. So your C library or your pthread library, if you have two processes that both use that library, you don't have to have two copies of it loaded in memory. You have only one copy and you have the page table entries both pointing to the same frame. Okay? This allows you to save memory space. So we'll come back to this next time. Okay, so let's stop here for today. And we'll resume in a week. Okay, no class on Tuesday. There's an exam on Tuesday.